All right. So we are talking today about kfiya in the midst of tzedakah, coercing somebody to give tzedakah. There are a few issues that lie at the heart of this discussion. So somebody just remind us, what do we have in the Gemara Bava Basra Daf Ches? Ariel, you read it last time, so tell us what's going on in Bava Basra Daf Ches.
Yes. So we're talking about I do whether or not, like when we collect stuff, we have two people to collect it for a kufa and three people for a tamfoy. And the reason why for a tamfoy you need three people is because you're going to be collecting and giving it out at the same time. That's what we discussed.
Right, but why do you even need two?
And two is because it's considered part of a shura, and we have to do a shura.
Yeah, so there's a type of officership, there's a type of communal authority. Why is there a communal authority? So the Gemara says, Mashkinin, from the language of Mashkon, right? To take collateral. Yeah, so if somebody refuses to give tzedakah, you could seize tzedakah from them. Okay? The Gemara says that's a bit of problematic, that's a stira to other things we know. The Gemara says, Lokasha, Hadam, and Hadalo Amid. Two views about what this means. Rashi says it means he's an ushir. Right, so you sounds like you could compel an usher to give tzedakah, but not a non-usher. The Yerzerah, which we saw, says what? It's not Slav Dafka and usher, but Yicholas Biado, yeah. Or Sipik Biado. He has sufficient funds to do this. I'm not sure if Rashi intended to say something different from the Yerzerah, but there could be an interesting nafkamina. What's a nafkamina? Why would a dafka be an usher? You might say, well, maybe that's like along the lines of Lefnim Yishur Sadin. Like we saw that in the Mordechai earlier in the Sugya. So maybe you can only compel somebody to chip in. Maybe the power to force somebody to chip in for tzedakah is just a lefnim yishur hadin power. Yes? So Rashi is saying that can only apply to an ashir. In other words, Rura says something more modest. He's like, no, what it really means is that if he could bear the brunt of it, then he's obligated to give this amount. Okay? We'll come back to this distinction later on. Okay, so then the Gemara tells us a story. The story appears also in the Gemara in Ksubis. What are we told, Ariel? Had the Rabbi Achfei, the Rav Nosson Barami. What did he do?
He went up to
money. Yeah, Litz Staka, as Staka, right? Mm-hmm. So we have two things here. One, there's Kfiya. That's clear in the Gemara. Rabbi Achfei, the Rav Nosson Barami. So Rabbi coerced Rav Nosson Barami, and he took 400 for Staka, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so our Gemara seems to say explicitly that you're Kofin al Staka. Yes?
Yep.
I just want to point out the word staka appears there in the Gemara itself, right? Shakomine abramezuzilit staka. What's the problem in the Rishonim here? Why is this problematic? Or before we even ask that, do you guys think it's intuitive that your kofel at staka before you got to this sugya, Eitan? No, right? You'd think that it's not so obvious that you would coerce somebody to tzedakah. You'd think there's something in the nature of tzedakah that it be voluntary, right? I think we have that intuition, right? It's like mine, this thing is mine, and it's up to me whether I want to give it away. So I think there is a strong intuition in that direction. And our Gemara cuts against that. Now, the Rishonim also think it's problematic that you're kofan tzedakah. What I'm wondering is, when the Rishonim think it's problematic, do they think it's problematic for the same reasons that our intuition before entering the sugya would tell us that it's problematic, or are they motivated by something else?
Something else.
Something else. What do you think the something else is?
The whole idea that in the midst of asid, it already has its benefit displayed to you. It can't be something which is forced upon or even an onish form.
Yeah, good. Now, it's actually, so let's just say blankly, very generally, chulin. They're worried about chulin, kufiyud, on the base. Yes? Right? Just want to say. Rumi's been worried throughout the Zman about, you know, how the Bavli organizes things. This is a major issue of kol mitzvah aseh shamatam tzcharim b'tzeda in bezen shamatam musharin alav. Sounds like a very fundamental halachic principle, no? It makes its way into the Gemara very en passant, very derech agav. Mara's little story that just interrupts the main discussion of Yeridea Sigyas. And Mara's like, wait, how could you do this? Kol mitzvah shmatan scharmat and ein bezen shmatan. It's not even the main discussion there. It's just a very fundamental principle that just like accidentally makes its way into that discussion. So the Gemara here says that any positive mitzvah, so tell us about the principle, Ariel.
Any positive mitzvah that has a Shemad and Tzar, but says, I guess, that it tells you, or it's already given to you what the reward is going to be for it, they can't go ahead and punish you for it.
So again, that's too strong. In Bezen Shemata Matarnal, as we pointed out in the last year, strictly speaking, it just means that they're not warned. Right? They're not warned about it. Right? We agreed on that translation, at least, of the Braisa? Okay. Now, let's just say there's a set of mitzaseh that in Bezdin Musharim. Tosos takes this to mean that in order for the stira to get off the ground, what does Tosos take this to mean? Sorry? Yeah, it's not subject to the jurisdiction of Bezin Shamata, so it's not subject to Kfiya. Right, that's the purported stira between the sigyas. Okay. Now, when we look at that Gemara, I want to know, is the Gemara's principle of In Bezin Shamata Musharin consistent with the underlying reason why intuitively we might think that stucco lies beyond the scope of Kfiya? So what does it mean? In other words, what does it mean? Or what's the reason for Ein Bezin Shamatam Musharin Aleph or Kol Mitzvah Shamatam Musharin Betzida? Yes? So let's talk about the Gemara in Chulin Kufiyot for a second. So who saw that Gemara? What's going on there? Who prepared Chulin Kufiyot? Daniel?
Would not be respectful of the parents.
Adhachi, so one second. There's some conversation going on, and in the middle, Adhachi, while this conversation about Trefos is going on, Isua. Yeah, so there's a certain fellow who wasn't giving proper honor to his father and mother, so what did they do?
They forced him
to do Kibbut Aveim properly, right? And the response is, how could you do that? It's mitzvah seshematan tzfarim b'tzeda. So where is mitzvah tzfarim b'tzeda for kibbut aveim? Kabbut esavicha v'esimecha l'man yarvichan yamecha. Right? The Torah says that there's this schar, l'chora, in olam hazeh, for kibbut aveim. What? Yeah, and what does Rashi say here, Daniel? L'kach. Okay, so Rashi actually makes a major claim that what?
He says that the punishment is that you don't actually fulfill it, then you just don't get the reward.
Yeah, so lekach, like for this reason, the Torah specifies the reward to tell you that this is the unique punishment for failing to perform a sasei, simply that you forego the benefit. You forego the matan schar that the Torah explicates. Yes?
Yeah.
Which implies, on Rashi's reading,
that Bezdin doesn't do any punishment.
Exactly. That it lies outside the jurisdiction of Bezdin enforcing it, because the only type of punishment there is for failing to perform it is losing out on the explicated schar. Correct? What?
Is that a punishment?
Rashi says Zehu Onsho. Anybody want to respond? Anybody have Ned's? Ned's wondering why would you say lack of schar is the punishment? That's clear what she's saying.
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
You're saying punishment usually sounds like something more severe?
Like if you don't do X, you will get punished, not you won't get rewarded.
Anybody have thoughts? It doesn't bother me so much, but.
You say like the stam, like the assumed thing is that you are gonna respect your parents and you are gonna get longer life. Then I guess by not doing it, you really are gonna get longer life.
Yeah. You get into some semantic question. What's the relationship between the absence of schar and imposition of onesh? Right. It doesn't really trouble me deeply. Does it trouble you guys?
It troubles me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with Ned.
You stand with Ned. Yeah. Why does it trouble you? Same as it doesn't sound like punishment.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you could read it as like Rashi's coming to like the zed b'choncho as opposed to based in zonesh. And he's trying to, as in, that exactly is the fit, because he's saying, only this is the onesh, this thing which is not really an onesh.
Right.
Keep signing farms. Make sure you get a rest of the spaces.
Giving out for everyone?
Keep going. Yeah, of course.
Nice.
All
right. Welcome. Yep.
Is the not getting a Hershey's Kiss and Onesh?
Right. Right.
No, I think like that's Rashi's thing. Like, Zed Onesh. This is the only Onesh, no other Onesh.
Right.
Like, this is the
max. Yeah, I think that's a fair reading. But Ned, I'm not so troubled by it. I think you could say the Onesh is uniquely not getting the star. Right? Like if Simcha were to not give to somebody, you'd feel punished. Right? Shka. Is this just an Adar thing, or? It's the first time he came in, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He usually waits by the door. Listen.
Right. Simcha Lilik. Great. All right. So that's Rashi's comment on the Gemara. So my question is, does this imply that there's just a class of mitzvos? Any mitzvah, any class of any mitzvah that matan schar b'tzeda, that's a different type of mitzvah in that it's almost at your discretion to forego the schar? That sounds a little, or that there's some. This class of mitzvos is intentionally not subject to judicial coercion. So the question that I'm asking is, why do we think that tzedakah is voluntary? What's the intuition behind that? And then what's the reason why it's not subject to coercion, not subject to the jurisdiction of Beis Din? I'm just wondering whether those two things are the same, right? Anybody have a thought? Yeah, Ariel?
Well, I think the voluntary part can go back to the whole thing of Pinimashos Adin, like the idea of if you think of Pinimashos Adin as being voluntary, or rather being a few that's upon somebody who's able to do so.
I mean, you want to say it's stuck as Pinimashos Adin?
If we're going to view it in that name, that in the same outlook you could have on Pinimashos Adin, whereas at first you might think that it's something voluntary, but really may not be.
Yeah. So you're saying the intuition is to say that tzedakah itself is a type of lefnei mishuras hadin?
Yeah.
Interesting. I would say a little further, and I mentioned this in the last year, we had the Rabbeinu Yonas done in the Shita Mekubetzes in Bava Kamma, who said that the reason why lefnei mishuras hadin is not subject to judicial coercion is because that itself is a type of mitzvah seishe matan schar b'tzeda. So that kind of brings Ariel's point a little full circle. You know, the reason why tzedakah is voluntary because lefnei mishuras hadin, but then the reason why lefnei mishuras hadin is not subject to judicial coercion is just because it's an instance of ein bezin shamata, etc. Because matan schar b'tzeda.
This is the bad kind of circular reasoning.
I mean, I guess not really.
Like full circle, everything's coming together, kumbaya. Like,
yeah, just like they're all related.
No, but like there's no basis. Like everything justifies the other.
Well, I think here you could say Invezin Shalmata Mutarnal as the most basic thing.
Okay.
I mean, nothing else except this would be the grounding, the Kol Mitzvah Shemazin Skar B'Tzeda, and then Tzedakah and Lefnei Mishuras Hadin are both instances of that.
Okay, and then we should still have the question.
Like, what's special about this category? Yeah, I agree. Benji?
It could be like that Ned's problem is like the answer to this. I mean, the way that
Ned's problem
is phrased in the Torah.
That was Ned and Josh's problem now.
Yeah, I guess Josh has some problem. But it's not listed as a.
There's no real Onesh.
It's not listed as a chiyuv. It's listed as like an offer. Meaning, if you want this, then do that. But it's totally within your wheelhouse to say, no, I'm good. Like, I'm like a from Jew, but I just don't want this specific trait.
Yeah, big chiddush to say that. Yeah, keep it aveim.
Yeah, that's not voluntary.
Like, yeah, I mean, those things sound very basic to me, right?
Not a grammarian, but I think kambay is a tzivui.
Sounds like a grammarian.
Yeah, and like...
Well, kaved leman, if you want, yarif and yamecha,
then
you could
say.
If you
want long life, then do it.
Yeah.
You don't like that? You're not comfortable with that?
You're with my non-binary state.
But you should eat healthy. If you want to live long, you should eat healthy.
That's not...
Okay, so I'm okay not living so long. You know, I don't have such hopes for the future. So I'm going to not eat healthy.
Right. Yeah, it's just a chiddush to think that kibud avim is that deflationary, right? That's all it is. Yeah, it's a chiddush. I'm saying that it's a chiddush. I mean, I think Ariel's suggestion that kibud avim, that stuff goes just to the mishur zedin is also pretty shocking.
Well, I was thinking more of the mishur zedin that like you might have thought it's voluntary at first, but it might not be.
At the havamina, right? Let's take Zev and then Romy.
Yeah, I just want to point out that like it could just be that there are like two paradigms for like reinforcing, activities in people. You know, you get a positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement, and they're sort of like they're kind of mutually exclusive. You don't want to mix up those two paradigms.
Yeah, I hear that.
So, like, sure. If you have one, if you're giving a scar to someone for doing something, you're not gonna also have a punishment for not doing the thing. It's just mixing up the two.
The problem is I'm not sure that works so well in the general framework of halacha that, you know, it's uniquely ischar versus unique onesh. Right. Just, you seem to have a lot of counterexamples. I would say there is something that can be said that for a kibud avim example, you might think that the moment it becomes compulsory or enforceable, then you undermine the mitzvah itself. Like if you have to force people to do kibud avim, that's not kibud avim anymore. Right? So there's something self-defeating about the judicial coercion. You could say that, you know, in contemporary tort theory and American jurisprudence, there's a question, should courts force the wrongdoer to apologize? And like the thought usually, they don't, right? You kind of just pay damages. And the thought is, well, what worth does a forced apology have, right? An apology is not an apology if it's coerced. So you might say something similar for these types of mitzvah matzah charan betzedash. It's not clear to me that would work out. Right, so you force somebody to go lefnei mishur hadin, like it's no longer supererogatory in that sense, right? You force somebody to mechabed their parents, it's no longer kavod.
Tzedakah
seems to be an outlier, right?
Right, like if they have the right to go.
Unless you think that tzedakah is about a certain sensitivity towards the poor, in which case that's missing when it's coerced. So again, we're just speculating. I don't think there's a clean theory to put all these together. But I just do think it is interesting with the Rimi Lunil and Bava Metzia that you get Lefnei Mishur HaDin being related to Ein Bez Mishalmata Mushar and all that. Maybe that justifies the intuition, right? Or it helps relate the intuition that tzedakah should be voluntary with the source that the Rishonim identifying Chul and Kafiyot. Romy, you're next.
Yeah, I was just going to go back to what Norton was saying a few days ago, like the idea that maybe there really is a serious avamina that all of it is just like fein adam lemakom kind of a mitzvah, which is similar to what you're just saying. And once you kind of motivate that havamina a little bit, then it's become more of a chiddush that actually it's really just about tzedakah is just about the community.
If it's been adam lemakom.
No, not a maskana, no.
Oh, the maskana is that it's not. That it's exclusively bein adam lechaver or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's possible. Let's take Ariel and then Josh.
This might be a little far afield of what you were saying regarding if we were actually to, you know, make a punishment for certain things to make them really enforceable, then that would actually take away from the value of them or undermine
yeah.
the benefit. Sort of, it seems to me to be a bit evocative of the question of Galam Suva Osa or Galam Shin Suva Osa, meaning sometimes...
You think it's better if it's done at a volition.
Right, there is a certain notion that things are ideal and they're done volitionally. Of course, you have to account for the counter-ideal, but...
Yeah.
You got a mission too, but...
Tzedakah, the intuition is, much better if it's not voluntary. That's the intuition. At least in the Havamina. Right. Although, maybe that's rejected. That's Romy's point. Okay. Josh, you get the last word on this.
I was just going to say, if you think that forcing people to do kibud avim kind of ruins the point, then I would have to say kal vachomer if you're doing it just out of long life. That would even be more against the point, so I don't know if that works
right,
as well.
Right. Right. It's not that Laman is the motivation why you should do it, it's just the attendant schar if you do it. It's not the reason why you ought to obey your parents. It's just saying, the Torah says, if you do it, here's the good stuff that's in store for you.
Oh, but it just as easily could have not said the star and still...
Right.
Still would have
yeah, it still would have been chiyuv, right.
Okay.
Right. I want to just add one other makor to this discussion. The Ramban in Kunches Dina deGarmi. I'm not sure how to square this with our sugya. The Ramban here is a very famous Ramban, where he talks about why, in his view, there are no damages for two Edim who don't testify in a case that they know Edus about. If you learn Bava Kama in Hakones, the Gemara there says there are a few things that only Chai B'Dei Shemayim, not B'Dei Adam. One of those things is if you're an aide who knows something about a case, had you testified, it would have changed the course of the litigation. But if you fail to testify, you're not chayef to pay nezikin for causing the litigant the loss. Okay? Everybody good with that background fact? Do I need to say it again? Okay. The Ramban says, why is it that you're not chayef damages? Here's a Bava Basra connection. Ramban says, why is it any different than failing to fix the mechitzas hakerem shenifritza? You know, you're lazy, you don't fix it, you don't go to testify, you don't build a wall. Mechitzas hakerem shenifritza, you're chayav to pay damages if it creates kalayim. Right? But if you fail to testify, you're not chayav. So what's the difference? The Ramban says, very famously in Kunches Dina deGarmi, that when it comes to the duty to testify for somebody, eino chayav lo hayud lo elami din gemilas chasadim. The duty to testify in lo yagiv and asavono is really grounded in a type of gemilas chasadim type of principle. Okay? And then he says, v'im lo ratza l'kayim osa mitzvah in min adin l'chayv ha-mamon. It's counterintuitive to hold somebody financially liable for just not wanting to do gemilas chasadim. If I don't pay a shiva call, you're going to slap me with a monetary fine? Seems like a category error. The Ramban says, same for this duty to testify, it's just Gemilas Chasadim. And then he says, and he thinks that the Mechitzas HaKerem case is different, that's not Gemilas Chasadim, he calls that's real Din Mamon, he says that's Chiyuv Mamon, but testifying is just Miderech Gemilas Chasadim. And therefore, if somebody doesn't want to do it, then you can't hold them liable. And then he says, Lamaze Doma, what's this analogous to? It's analogous to somebody who doesn't want to return a lost object. Look at this. Somebody read this phrase for me. Yeah, or somebody doesn't want to give some of their money to a poor person, Bezin's not going to be mechayev of him. Why is this analogous? It seems to be, given the analogy to the Aegis case, what's the reason, according to this Ramban, why Bezin wouldn't be kofa him? Well, yeah, fine. I don't know. Read the highlighted part. Because it's just meeting Gemilas Chasadim, right? Which I think is, Ariel, kind of vindicates your earlier point. The Ramban explicitly draws an analogy between failing to testify and failing to get tzedakah. And he says that's because those are chiyuvim of Gemilas Chasadim. We never coerce on Gemilas Chasadim. Right? So I just want to point out the Ramban's logic I think vindicates the initial intuition. Yes? That there's something, it's a category mistake to think that gemilas chasadim type obligations are subject to judicial coercion. Tzedakah is a type of gemilas chesed obligation. Correct? It's like going to pay a shiva call. It's like going to your friend's wedding. It's like going to a funeral. Yes? And there's something intuitive of not forcing those types of mitzvos. They're like Lifnei Mishur Sadin type things. All right? Now, how do you square the Ramban's comment in Dina deGarmi with the Tosfos analysis? You can say something very easy, which is just that maybe there are two reasons why you shouldn't be coercing on Saka. Matan Sfarim B'Tzeida, and the fact that it's Gemilas Chasadim. That Tosfos barked up the wrong tree in posing the question is Tosfos' issue, not the Ramban's issue. Right? You could say that. Okay? So I just want to point out that the Ramban's analysis in Dina deGarmi is actually, I think, a little sharper than the way Tosos formulates the issue. It's not just this issue of Matan Sfarim B'Tzeida. The Ramban grounds in a Gemilas Chasadim consideration. Okay. Everybody with me? Okay. So that's the setup of the problem. Let's get back into Tosfos land, where we're thinking in terms of just the steer between sugyas. So we get approach number one. What's approach number one? Rabbeinu Tam's first answer. How do we reconcile our Gemara with the fact that stucca normally should not be subject to kfiya? Ned?
Kfiya bidvarim.
Kfiya bidvarim. So what does kfiya bidvarim mean?
They're just trying to convince him verbally.
They're just trying to convince him verbally. So it's just like social pressure or something. You tell him he's a bad guy if he doesn't chip in, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is Rabbeinu Tam 1. So let's talk about answers here. Rabbeinu Tam number 1, bidvarim. That answer effectively does what? Yeah, it vindicates the initial intuition that there's no basis for kfiya and staka. And our Gemara in Baba Basra is lavdafka. Doesn't mean that he coerced him in any judicially meaningful way. He just told him, like, I'll never talk to you again if you don't give staka this amount. Okay? Yes? So, according to Rabbeinu Tam number one, there is no coercion on staka. According to Rabbeinu Tam number two, what do we get? Vo'od tirates. Second answer. Benji, what's the second answer? Yeah, what does that mean?
That since it's just a rabbi that's forcing him to do it.
Well, what's the kibbutz aleihem?
Yeah, like, oh, since when, like, I guess when you join the community, you accept the authority that the
gabbai
has over you to force you to do stuff?
Actually, so you could say it that way. I don't think Tosfos here actually goes that far even. It's a much narrower sense. What is it? Not even like when you join the community.
Did you agree to do it?
Yeah, basically it's like, yeah, you agreed to allow the gabbai to coerce you.
What, like in the moment that he's coercing you?
I would say at some earlier point.
Okay.
You know, you made a pledge to tzedakah, and then you know everybody agrees. Oh, we know that we, when we're in shul on Yom Kippur and we make the pledge, we all feel it strongly. But then once we get home, like none of us want to write the check. So, you know, we agree that the gabbai could come and beat us up to give this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's almost like contractual that you agree to be subject to kfiya.
Which also kind of eliminates the kfiya.
Yeah. Exactly. They accepted the gabbai. I think that is basically another way of saying that there's no real kfiya for tzedakah at all. I could also, you know, force the. I could also tell them. What's an example? I could tell my kids. You know, I don't know if I could do this actually. I could tell somebody to beat me up if I don't want to go to my neighbor's funeral. Right? I know that I'm not going to want to go, so. I say, oh yeah, you dragged me out of the house, right, to go to the funeral. So that's just that I'm licensing it personally. Yeah? Okay, so these are all anti, so Rabbeinu Tam number two.
This is number one, this is number two.
Anti-coercion and staka answers. Rabbeinu Tam, so then we have the re. What's the re's answer? Josh?
That there's kind of like spadium in tzedakah, and since one side of it is a lav, that lav is the thing that you become
on. Yeah, excellent. The Ri seems to say that tzedakah has a lav. I like the way Josh puts it. It sounds like there are two dinim in tzedakah. There's an asay and a lav. And the kfiya doesn't flow from the asay. The kfiya flows from the lav. Yes? There is a very interesting discussion here on the achronim. As you would expect, along the lines of, well, are you kofet exclusively on the lav, or is there something about the combination of tzedakah integrating a lav and an asay that the fact that there is a lav explains why you could also be kofet on the asay shabo? So, just the question is whether you think the lav and the asay are coextensive. So, Some Achronim think, well, maybe you only violate the law if an Ani sticks his hand out to you. In which case, maybe you'd only be kofer on those types of cases, not on all cases of tzedakah, which is one way of reading Tosfos. The other way of reading Tosfos is saying, no, once we know there's a law, it's not subject to the rule in chulin, so we're always going to enforce on tzedakah. Okay? But I do think that, well, these are anti-fia, the re, in some sense, is pro-kfia on tzedakah. Do you agree with that characterization of the re? Even if it's just for the lot. So either, as Josh put it, he's pro-kfia on one din of tzedakah, or if you take like this lav and asay being integrated, then because there's a lav, he's pro-kfia on all aspects of tzedakah, right? Meaning, without a lav, another way of putting this is you could say without a lav, we would have thought that tzedakah is just gemilas chasadim. Kamash malan, that tzedakah is more than that. Right? That's the integrated way of putting it. The real tzvei dinim, like tzvei dinim that don't touch each other way, is to say that one aspect of tzedakah is gemilas chasadim, but there's also a second aspect that's more than gemilas chasadim. Zecharia?
I think going back to like the original intuition that, you know, tzedakah has to be like a divas slave kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think like a lot of that stems from some, to ask a person on the street, like a lot of that stems from like amaranthus, but they don't even think there's a lot. They don't think there's any problem. Ani asks you who is Jewish and all the circumstances. It's like, all right, I don't want to be a Baal Chesed today. It's like, no, you just violated Mr. Doraisa.
Yeah.
I think there's just like a lacuna of knowledge about that.
Sure. Yeah, it's a good way of putting it. You don't want to say that we're being a Tom at Amaranthus, though.
No, I just maybe thought that a lot of stuff. I don't know.
Right. What it, like maybe the essay dominates the lav, or like the lav is just there to.
Right.
Something like that. Yeah. Here. Then we get the Ritzvah. So this is answer number 4 in Tosfos. Very rich Tosfos.
Also, guys, notice some of you are saying it's like our first Tosfos that we read all year.
But here, this is an action-packed Tosfos. So he quotes the Ritzvah. The Ritzvah is the brother of the Rosh Mishams, right? So what does the Ritzvah here say? What's his reading? How does he solve the problem? Rami?
He says that to be kofa, you just can't do an energy. Whatever that means, I'm not sure what that means. But.
So what does he mean? What's his tactic?
Basically saying onesh doesn't refer to kfiya.
What do you mean the onesh doesn't refer to kfiya?
Like when it says they can't be, like, in Beit Shemata can't be.
You can think of it this way. If Rabbeinu Tam modifies the meaning of kfiya in Bava Basra Dafches, right, he moves to modify Bava Basra to make it in line with Chulin, Rabbeinu Tam effectively says the Gemara in Chulin controls, right? Chulin is the right Gemara, and our Gemara should be read in light of it. The Ritzvah seems to go the other way. Right, he says, Baba Basra Dav Ches controls, there is kfiya, and we have to reread Chulin, right, modify Chulin in light of Baba Basra. So how does he modify Chulin?
The Ritzvah,
yeah.
He's saying the Sarim doesn't mean kfiya.
Yeah, so good. What does it mean?
It means you can't punish. Right?
What do you mean you can't punish? No, so it's read the Ritzvah. The Ritzvah Nira.
Yeah, the Ritzvah Nira. They would be able to say on the association level, so I would say that.
Louder.
Sorry. The aim based in Masaran on the association of Matan Sara Seda. Highly the aim Najan.
So what does that mean?
It doesn't mean that they can't be feel that we were thinking that before, but rather it means they can't, you know, punish or whatever.
Wait, yes.
Okay.
Just it's a nifal. Ne nashim. Ma'an nishim would be to dispense. What?
Can't be punished?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meaning who can't be punished?
Yeah. I guess perpetrator or whatever.
No. Who's the subject of Ain Bezin Musarna Mitzvah Shmatzah Chavetzeda?
Nashim. mitzvah sase, I guess.
No. We don't punish mitzvah sase. Yeah, the bezdin.
They can't be punished.
Yeah, meaning that the you would think that if a bezdin fails to beat people up for not doing mitzvahs,
so
they are they're violating their obligation as enforcing the law. Like, you know, the all the Rishonim talk about the bezdin in Shechem, or the people of Shechem, or Chayav Misa, for not punishing Shechem ben Chamor, right? Because they failed. They're punished because they didn't do their duty as implementing justice. Mm. And I think that's actually Robert Covert's book on Justice Accused is about the breach of duty of the judges in the South, in the antebellum South, and just, you know, enforcing all these horrible laws. Failure to enforce punishments, you think, oh, the Bezdin gets punished for that. The Bezdin can't just be this passive entity and let people do crimes, right? Shovtem shovtem titein lecha. The chiddush here is that the Bezdin won't be punished for not enforcing certain mitzvah shmatan tzchar b'tzeda. Right? So what does that mean? Effectively, what does that mean? Tosa says this over here. When the Gemara in Chulin says, in that case about the guy who they beat up to do kibbut avayim, and the Gemara responded, shavku, leave him alone, hachi perusho, einchem muzharim lahachricho, achi asek shar misasei. What does that mean?
Then you will get punished.
Yeah, you're not obligated to beat him up. But it's totally at the discretion of the Bezdin to enforce it. This gets back to something that we saw in the Nimi Shuras Adin discussion in Runya 2, Dafei, where you're saying, well, if Nimi Shuras Adin is subject to Kfiya Bezdin, how is it different from regular Din? And our point, one of the points we made there is that it's really discretionary. You could be kokam of Nimbi Shurasin, but you don't have to be kokam of Nimbi Shurasin. And the Ritzba is making a similar point here. The Ritzba's analysis is that the Gemara of Ein Bezin Shalmata Musharin Aleha just means that a Bezin Shalmata is not going to be punished for failing to enforce performance of Mitzvah Shalei, but it doesn't mean it lies outside their jurisdiction to force. So Tosus's mistake, according to the Ritzba, is to read Chulin Kuf Yud as saying that Ein Bezin Shalmata Musharin Aleha means it's outside their jurisdiction. Really, it means Kfiya is a matter of discretion. Anybody see that? Major difference. So, what happens then, according to the Ritzba, is that it's up to Bezdin to decide, or it's up to a cult to decide whether they're going to enforce on Staka. Yeah? Anybody see that? So you get really three major views. In Tosus itself, you have an anti-Kfiya camp. Staka is not subject to Kfiya at all. I'll just say the Ramban, I'll add Ramban to this camp also. In Dien of the Garmi, when he says, like, Emil's Chasadim, right, clearly he falls in the anti-Kfiya camp. You have the Ri, who's pro-Kfiya, and you have the Ritzva, who thinks it's discretionary Kfiya. All right? And by the way, a straightforward reading of the Ri, assuming the Ri assumes the premise of a Rebbeinu Tam, the Ri holds that Kfiya is obligatory. A Bezdin that fails, or a community that fails to enforce tzedakah obligations, is like Shechem, right, and failing to apply the law correctly in their jurisdiction. Okay? Good? All that packed into this little Tosas here. So Tosos comes back with a vengeance, even though we neglected Tosos for so long. Okay, thoughts on this, Tosos? You have shorter versions of Tosvos in these other places, Tosos and Ksivos and Tassima base, where the Gemara repeats the story. We're going to look at that Gemara separately, the Achvei Rabba. Tosos says, Heich Kofan al Atztaka, Matan Tarim Betzeda. I do want to say one more thing. Well, I'll say this in a second. Tosus just repeats this over here. He gives two quick answers. Achvei b'dvarim, that's Rebbeinu Tam number one. Here it's not quoted in the name of Rebbeinu Tam, but this is typical of different Tosus in, you know, different Tosus and different Masechtas were edited by different people, so they kind of just come out differently. Notice this, inami, katzvu b'neihem b'nei ha'ir, lases kach v'kach l'chodesh. Hilkach achve kedaminam perakam devavaser de rasham anir lasila kitzasim. This is a new answer that we get in Tosus Ksuvis. What do we get here? What's Scharia?
This is like classic Rita Tan Barishai. I think if they make an agreement to do X, then once they all agree to that, then they can enforce X.
Exactly. Now, I just want to say the following. I think it's different from Benji, what Benji read, of Kibla Leim Sheikhuflos on Agabai in Artosos, because that's like where I tell I tell people, beat me up until I go to the funeral. So I'm like authorizing you to coerce me. Here, there's no authorization for coercion. The authorization is for the financial obligation, right? The community tax people said everybody has to give this amount of money for charity. Once it falls under Rashan B'nai Yer Lasiel Kitzasan, Mimela becomes enforceable, like we saw in our last sugya. Correct? This is similar to what we saw in the Arzarua. Right? And the Arzarua right here in our sugya said, in Hilchos Tzedakah Siman Daled, how do you reconcile the Stira? Blah, blah, blah. Kiditan Rabbanan, Rashan B'nai Yer Lasiel Kitzasan, Liknos Sevra Kitas Devraim, etc. So that Orzarua on this second day in Tosos Ksivis Mem Tesem Beis thinks the reason why the Kfiyah gets off the ground.
Let me just flesh this out a little more. So one, two. So I'm just gonna say, I'm just gonna switch to Hebrew. So you have Tosos Ksivis says there's no Kfiyah on Tzedakah, but what is there? Yeah, Rasha Menea Yer. So you can compel qua Yaradea principles, but you could compel qua Hilchos Shtein and Rasha Menea Yer principles. Yes? Now it's an interesting question, how exactly that relates to Tzedakah as an obligation, right? So if the town says everybody has to give this amount, are you Mekayim Mitzvah Tzedakah in that way? Or is that a separate obligation? This gets back to Benji's Chuvos or Moshe, which we'll talk about. So it's an anti-kfiyah view, but the kfiyah is not on Tzedakah, it's on Rashan B'nai Yer. And I'm going to add to this list the Ramban about Gemilas Chasadim in Gideon the Army, in the anti-kfiyah camp.
Okay. Everybody agree with my reading of Tosus Ksivis? You see how it's different from the just Kibbol and Magavai, Romy?
It's anti-kfiyah in the sense that it only because Rashan B'nai Yer being Kibbol.
Yeah. It's not kfiyah on the mitzvah and tzedakah, right? It's kfiyah on a communal obligation, right? The community legislates, and they could obligate you to pay. Now, what I was saying is that to Benji's Rav Moshe issues, which we'll talk about later, it's an interesting question whether once the community obligates you to pay this amount, whether you discharge your chiyuv tzedakah through that. Correct? Okay. Like if your tax money is funding welfare stuff for people in Lakewood, do you discharge your tzedakah obligation? Right, that would be the type of question. Josh?
When you say discharge your obligation, you're assuming that it's something like Meister money or something, right? Like, I mean, according to what we've been saying before.
Tzedakah. Just your tzedakah obligation, whatever it is.
Meaning, is that something you've ever discharged? Or is it more that like, if you have leftover money, then
you always have to. Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get to the amount of tzedakah. Fair. Okay, then we have the Tosus Chulin, Kafiyudim Abeis, just added to the list of Tosusin. Anything new here? I don't think so. Rabbeinu Tam Achle B'dvarim, Od Tzedakah, you can lie. So you see, different answers get. It's interesting that why some Tosusin like some answers, not others. But I don't think there's anything new in Tosus Chulin. Now, there is a major premise that needs to be interrogated. What have we been assuming so far in order for Tosus' question to get off the ground? What does Tosus' question assume? It's a stated premise in Tosos, but it has to be defended. So let's go back to Tosus' question, Babasu Daf Ches.
That there is, in fact, a reward written by Tzedakah?
Yeah. That Tzedakah itself is, in fact, Mitzvah Seishah Matan Tzecharim B'Tzedakah.
Yes?
Tosos, to motivate that, says, oh, by Tzedaka it says, ki pasoach tiftach es yadchalo, v'ksiv ki beglal hadavar hazeh yivarechecha. So the thought is, beglal hadavar hazeh yivarecha, if you're going to get some bracha for it, that's matan schar and betzeda. The matan schar being the bracha that you're going to get. So I think Tosos is plausible, right? Who rejects that? Who rejects that premise, that stuck as an instance of matan schar and betzeda? Before I get to it. Laughing because of the music or trying to figure out where I'm scrolling to? I think it's here. Anybody know? I thought it was the...
Was it the Yom Tov El, talking about like the Nedivah slave?
No, not the Rios of Tuvel in. It should be in the Ma'arik. I thought it was Ma'arik. Maybe that got bumped too far down after the Ktos. That'd be my fault then. Nobody got past the Ktos yet, right? This music is
Yeah.
Huh. I must have accidentally.
One of the earlier shukos. Alright.
Sorry. Second, guys. How do you switch this to Hebrew?
You press the Windows key in space.
It's fine. All right, we'll come back to this answer. But I think there's a Ma'arik. Somebody search their thing and tell me if the Ma'arik is on their source sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I found.
Tell us, Ronnie.
Yeah.
Where is it?
Like the one that's like after the Ma'arik on page 3, like all the way up there.
That's the one about Lashon Ne'ah.
No.
The one on page 5.
Oh yeah.
Good job there.
And the Shuma race on page 3.
I'm going to get back to this. Alright, well, let me say that there are some Rishonim.
Sure. Yes. Thanks
well,
so much.
There are some Rishonim. For the chocolate, you could have mine also if you want. You want it also?
Okay.
Alright. Okay, we'll come back. There are some Rishonim who are skeptical that Tzedakah itself is Mr. Shematan Tzchar and Betzeda.
That what? If you give money, you'll get
Spot. I'm saying as a separate way of trying to substantiate.
I don't know if that's what they bring.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Okay, I want to mention one other major shita in this discussion. So that is the Orzarua. Anybody get a chance to go through the Orzarua in Siman Dalet at greater length? Okay, so Zachariah, tell us about it. He runs through the answers of Rabbeinu Tam. It's the most fleshed out, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting how he doesn't use his own approach to defeat the question. As in, he brings his approach, and then he brings the question in Tosa treatment, and then he doesn't say, oh yeah, but also just for shine.
Yeah, but I think he quotes Rabbeinu Tam as having that view. No?
Doesn't.
Let's see. He quotes the Ritzba. Look at this. He quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Sounds like, by the way, Arvin and Tom would give different answers at different times, right? Just nice insight into Arvin and Tom's MO. So you can see here he says, let's see. He quotes the first answer of Arvin and Tom, Pirush Arvin and Tom, Kfiya B'dvarim. Okay. Or Zeruah thinks that's forced. He thinks it doesn't work with the Sugya. So he says, Od Hayim Mefarish Arvin and Tom. So let's see, what's the rest? Devadai.
So this is just the chief showing that the majority can't force an individual to do anything by power of the, unless it was a prior to Tikkun HaSeir.
V'had kafi revelor of Nasan, Hainu.
Hainu shehaya kfar katsva, v'tzmad beinehen, mithratu ba, me'ikar.
Meikara. So that's just an instance of Rabbi Tam's view of Rashan b'nei Yir la'siyal kitzasan. Because then Rabbeinu Tam requires unanimous consent. So actually Rabbeinu Tam himself here in this answer gives a Rashan b'nei Yair answer.
Yeah. Like we have in the Yair Zeruah and Tosfos.
Correct. Okay, and then he says, Upalmim ha'yir Rabbeinu Tam.
So Upalmim ha'yir Rabbeinu Tam, that's on the fire. Shekibu aleim b'nei Yiro, shel Rabbeinu Tam bar Ami, she'ehi reshus l'gabayim ha'kufosan.
So this is just explicit about my answer to Benji, that you see these are two separate answers, except in the Gabai is distinct from there having been a Takana Seir to force you to, Takana Seir being Mechayiv you Litzarche Ha'ir. And let me point out, in Ravina Tam, it's very Meduyak, he says, Vadai ein b'nei ha'ir yicholim lachof echad litzdaka, v'lo l'chol davar she'eno Takana Seir. But you could force somebody for something that is Takana Seir. So it's an interesting question about whether tzedakah itself, not the mitzvah of tzedakah, but a dimension of giving money that would be the takanas a year, right? Like cleaning up the streets, getting the poor people off the streets, something like that. Okay. Good. And then let's see the other answer he quotes from the Rash Mishans.
So it says, Nira Lefarish, Begam Rishum Shonam, as well.
So this is like the answer we saw in Ritzvah.
I guess just here it gets cited in the name of Rosh Mishnah, which is fine. That ein bezin shel matam muzharnale means you don't have to beat the guy up until he complies. You don't have to continue beating him up. There's no responsibility on bezin to do that. There's no responsibility of makanos sawach tetsay nafsho. But nevertheless, aval muzharim heim lechafos. So this is actually even a little different than our version of the ritzvah. It's just two different degrees of coercion. One is that Bezdin has an obligation to coerce, but like gently.
Or once.
Once, correct. You don't have to coerce until the result is achieved. Everybody see that distinction? It's a subtle distinction, and not anything major hangs on it. But the Rosh Mishnah's variation of this view is that it's not really discretionary kfiya, it's obligatory kfiya. But Bezin doesn't have to see the results through in their field. That's the distinction of Yair Zeruah draws.
Okay, that's the survey of the, I would say, major answers to this question that don't bear directly on what I want to tease out about the nature of tzedakah. Yes? Okay, what do I want to tease out about the nature of tzedakah? For this, I want us to look at the Ritva and the Aruch HaShulchan, their answers to this question. Because they move into something more specific about the nature of tzedakah to explain that, yes, they agree with Tosfos that Kulin generally should apply to tzedakah. So generally speaking, tzedakah should not be subject to kfiya. So they're fundamentally in the camp of Ravina Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam 1 and 2, that there's no kfiya on tzedakah, and in the camp of Tosfos Ksuvos, that there should be no kfiya on tzedakah, and Ramban, that there should be no kfiya because gemilas chasadim. But, so they agree with all the problems, But they think there's something special about the nature of tzedakah that justifies coercion. Yes? Some special overriding factor. Josh Hurt, do you know what the overriding factor is?
No.
Okay. Daniel, do you know what the special factor is that the Ritva appeals to? It's the Ritva, the Rava, arguably the Ritva Radvaz and Orcha Shulchan, who all three make this type of argument. Machsorim Shalaniyim. What does that mean?
The want for like the lacking. Like just how their
needs. Yeah.
Their difficulties in life and how they just.
Yeah, their needs, right? The shortfallings or the needs of the Aniyim. So the Ritva and Ksuvos Mem Tes cites all these questions of Tosfos. He agrees with the premise of the questions, but he says tzedakah is special. Why is tzedakah special? So Daniel, read this for us. Yes. Mipnei machsoram shel aniyim. So what do you make of that? What's that rationale? Roni, what's that rationale?
Sorry, I was supposed to
know. Okay. Benji, do you know the rationale?
I could say that maybe it's going along the same line of reasoning as like with the who is the picture? Is that the Ruchaim or is that?
That's the Misora journal, according. It's a Shirim of the Rav.
Okay. So I think maybe it's the same idea.
No, Rav. Don't say it. It's not the same idea. No.
No, meaning that like the.
The Rav's approach is not as good.
The
Rav's approach is not as good as this.
Okay, fine. So you can say it's like the rights of the
Aniyim? Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay.
Right. Meaning there's something special about the needs of the Aniyim that explain why we're going to subject this to Kfiya. And notice this is internal to Hilchos Tzedakah. Right, it says, V'asisa, Azhar Levezim Sheyashoch, V'hu Adin L'chol Tzedakah Mipnei Mishim Machsorim Shel Aniyim. The Torah carves out a special exception to allow or require fee on tzedakah, because we have to make sure that the aniyim's needs are met in the end of the day. But so it's an interesting question how central that is to the mitzvah of tzedakah, about meeting the needs of the aniyim. But for the Ritva, it's that special feature of the mitzvah of tzedakah, which makes it different from every other mitzvah, sase, shematan, svarim, betzeda. Notice he thinks that kibud av v'aim is different from tzedakah. That's not about ensuring the needs of the parents, but tzedakah is about ensuring the machsorim shel aniyim. Sorry, you had a comment on this, then Ari?
It was on one of the questions.
What?
It was on one of
the
questions.
Okay.
I feel like this might be a little extreme. When the Rambam mentioned that by a pidyon shum, that because he's an aniyim, he is considered thirsty, and that he's considered a sukkah nefasha, and that's why I can override one thing to another, could this be implying that aniyim is somewhat of a case of sukkah nefasha, which is why I think it's overrided?
I don't think there's anything about sakanas nefashos here. It's just about machsorim, their needs. De machsorim. To override kfiya? I don't think it's about overriding kfiya. I think he's just trying to explain why the Torah has special rules. He's saying, look, yeah, chulin's true. That's true for every mitzvah, shemat, and svarim, betzeda. But at Sinai, the Torah carved out an exception for tzedakah because the Torah thinks that tzedakah is about ensuring that the needs of the aniyim are met. Let me give another version of this, and then we'll just we'll take some more questions. Aruch HaShulchan, in Yeridah Simen Reish Mem Sifva, very famous Aruch HaShulchan, he says, Hikshu Mea Yushalmi Dekidushin, Be'achad Shalo Ratza Lizon Es Aviv, V'kafuhu B'chol Mine Kfios Ache Nasan Lo Mizonos. Okay, so Yushalmi has a story about coercing somebody to give tzedakah for Kibud Av V'Aim, similar to the Babli and Chulin, Kofiud. Okay. Vanitema, how could they do this? So he says this. Vanias daiti hayanira, devadai mishum etzem hamitzvah ein kofin. That you can't coerce for the mitzvah itself. Aval zeu kishaino nogea la hechrech shel acherim. But that's only when it doesn't pertain to the needs of others. Hechrach would be like the necessities of others. Kigon b'chulin, like in the case of chulin, shelo hayam mokir la'aviv, So he's saying in the case of Chulin where they said, don't coerce this guy to be Mekayim Kibud Av V'Aim, what was happening there? The Gemara uses the language of Mokir. What is Mokir?
Kavod.
Yeah, it wasn't giving Kavod. Kavod. So on that aspect of the mitzvah, we're not kofet. Why? Because Kavod is not a need. For some people, maybe it is. So you have to get into the Deh Machzor Asher Yachzarlo question. One second. However, in a case where, he thinks of Yishalmi's case, where the parent is in need, Ein la aviv ma lechol, pshita shekofen es haben lahachilo, velo kidei sheyekayim hamitzvah, el mipnei tsar aviv sheraev lelechem. Umemela de mekayim hamitzvah gamkein. This is a very tricky statement. He says the kfiya is not because of the, this is my reading, it's not because of the fact of there being a mitzvah, an obligation, it's because of the need of the recipient. Yes? And then he extends that to tzedakah, which is what we're interested in. V'lachin b'tzedakah kofin lo kidei sheyekayim ha-mitzvah, elam ibnei tsa'ar ha-aniyim, u'mimela d'mekayim ha-mitzvah gamkein. So the way I read this is that the kfiya doesn't arise from tzedakah being a mitzvah. What does the kfiya arise from? Well,
the need.
The need, but the tsar in his case, which is just another way of putting a dire need. But I don't. I think it's bad ontology. It's just bad way of thinking to say that. Let me be more explicit about this. The Aruch HaShulchan distinguishes between the mitzvah and the tzar, right? The mitzvah versus the tzar. And he says, we're kofa on this, not on this. Yes, this is the kfiya on the tzar, not on the mitzvah. I think that's a bit of a clumsy way of putting it. I think what he really should be saying, or what he really means, is that the mitzvah is to ensure the tsa'ar, that there's no tsa'ar for the aniyim, or to use the Ritva's language, that the machsorim shel aniyim is met. The thing that justifies the kfiya is not the mitzvah property of tzedakah, but the property of tzedakah that it's there to meet the machsorim shel aniyim. What I want to avoid saying, which you could read the Aruch HaShulchan as endorsing, is that there's something called a mitzvah, and then there's just some other principle out there called meeting the machzorim of either aniyim or parents, and, oh, by the way, this non-mitzvah thing in the Torah, just general principle that you could always be kofet to meet machzorim, like to meet deficiencies or tzar.
Social welfare.
Well,
social welfare.
Right, I just think that's like a weird principle that then is floating around in the halakhic ether. Like, we just don't, like, what is that thing? Right.
That seems to be what he's saying.
What?
That's what he's saying.
It is. Wait, you think that's what he's saying?
Yes.
See, I don't want to say that. I think we're kofed because of the mitzvah of tzedakah, machzorim shalaniyim being a fundamental part of tzedakah. In the Ritva, it's clear. In the Ritva, he says, l'inyan tzedakah kaifinan mipnei machzorim shalaniyim. V'hu adin l'chol tzedakah mishum machzorim shalaniyim.
Yeah, but it's a mitzvah tzedakah, or it's
not there. Really?
I think the contrast from the start of that
ritual. You're saying there are two components of the mitzvah, the etzma mitzvah and the
yes, but two components is vague. Yes, but yes, there are two, let's say, properties that tzedakah has. It's a command. Right? There's a general rule of kfiya la mitzvah. Yes? That's not what explains kfiya for tzedakah. Because it's an exception to that rule, because of chulin kfiya. What explains kfiya and mitzvah tzedakah is not the mitzvah feature, but the fact that the commandment is about machzorim shel aniyim. Yes? Or use my parlance, it's the protecting the rights of the aniyim feature of tzedakah. But I want to say that's a feature of the mitzvah tzedakah. And that's what grounds the kfiya. It's not the feature of being a mitzvah that explains the kfiya. That's how I read the Aruch HaShulchan. I think it's definitely a plausible read of the Aruch HaShulchan. If you think the better reading is Ned's way, then it's unfortunate for the Aruch HaShulchan. That he formulated this way. Probably was a mistake. Maybe, so he doesn't say that. I mean, that's just like a nice way. If you want Reb Chaim, if you want the Reb Chaim thing to be more lumpish than it is, you could say. Right, yeah, I think the Reb Chaim thing is not so exciting. I mean, we'll talk about it in a second, but I think these views are very exciting. So I think the Ritva Aruch HaShulchan view is pretty interesting. We have a bit of an open question how exactly these are related, but I think they're related in the sense that they're both saying that the mitzvah, what's special about tzedakah is that it's to meet the needs of the aniyim. That property justifies kviyah. Because it's so dire, it's so important that their needs be met. Ned's reading of the Aruch HaShulchan is that, like, no, there's no kviyah on tzedakah, but there's kviyah on this separate halachic principle about meeting people's needs. Yes? Do you guys like Ned's? Find it plausible? What is this principle?
Caring about other people? Well, it's not me.
I mean, you have to go in for, you have to be very gung-ho on my theory, on the theory I was mentioning last year, that there are these non-mitzvah things floating around that are very important.
It's the word.
What?
It's the word.
That's the word. Sorry?
I feel like I'm excited by the
vice
theory of
tzedakah. Let me say one more thing. V'lachein b'tzedakah kofens. I want to say it's kviyah on tzedakah. But lo kadei she'ekayim, it's not so that like you fulfill the obligation dimension of it, but rather mipnei the tzar aniyim dimension of it.
It's not about the giver.
What?
You can just phrase it as, it's not about the duty of the giver.
Yeah.
It's
like a, you know, good gizah, yeah.
It's not about that, oh, the giver has to fulfill his mitzvah, the yotzeh. It's not that. Okay. There's another motivating halachic.
Yeah, I think that's a very sharp way of putting it. Right. The kfiyah is not mitzad. I'm not saying the kfiyah is mitzad mekabel. It's not mitzad the duty, it's mitzad the right. And oh, because of Hofeld, because of the correlativity, mimela, that you also are mekayim your duty. Right? Yeah. Great comment. That's very helpful. Josh.
And also, what I think is interesting is if it's totally about the tzar and not the mitzvah at all, then why would you say that you should specifically be Hofeld, the son, to feed his father? Right?
Yeah.
Why is it any more on the son than anyone else?
Yeah, great point. Ned, what do you say to that?
He's only the son.
Yeah, why the son of all people? Be kofa da neighbor, zenel din of kfiya
nid. Yeah, but that's about.
Let's say the son lives in a different city.
No, relatives are to hire someone.
But that's a tzedaka principle. Yeah. No, that's a tzedaka principle. I only know that principle of milk of tzedaka. Okay, so now you're already saying it looks like tzedaka, it smells like tzedaka, it has all the rules of tzedaka, but we're not going to call it tzedaka.
I think one of the basic halachos stuff, like the Rambam says, like what's included in kibbud, like feeding. Like I think that is like, I think when the Gemara says, oh, it wasn't being honoring his father, I think it is talking about feeding, providing food. And the Rosh Hashanah point is like, yeah, we had other food. And here it's saying, well, one of the primary kibbud abayim is feeding your parents if they need it. And so it says, sometimes it's just, you know, kiyum mitzvah points for the no sayings, the father has food anyway.
Right.
Sometimes it's a real tzar, therefore that launches it into the same
way. Rights-based dimension.
Right. I don't think you have to bring it to that. I guess it's like, internal to keep it up aim, there's, could be...
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think the first part is all about the internal keep it up aim.
Right.
Keep it up aim has a rights-based dimension and an obligation-based dimension.
Yeah.
And same for tzedakah. Yeah. Keep it up aim and tzedakah are parallel. No, I think this is a very nice way of thinking about it. Let me give one other formulation. And here... What? The Radvaz you like? Yes, the Radvaz also arguably falls into this camp. In Manas Aniyim Zayin Yud, you can see the Radvaz is bothered by the same issues that bother Tosfos. You know, this is like classic or Chaim move. It's like, here's the issue bothering Tosfos, but no one's explored that issue in the Rambam's framework. So here's just like a different answer to explain it for the Rambam. Although I don't know that you have to give a different answer for the Rambam. Except that the Rambam seems to endorse Kfiyah. So I guess that just rules out the Rabbeinu Tam
type answers. We'll look at Rambam's formulation inside.
So Advaz says, so how are you able to be Kofa? Nira Lee, volunteer to read this. Ned? Does this music make you any happier? Yeah, a little bit. Okay, good. Yeah, maybe afterwards. Right. It's a little distracting, though. Yeah, I really should have highlighted this part also. So what's he saying, Ed? So Mitzvah Seishel Tzedakah is different from every other Mitzvah Seh, because it also has a takana la'aniyim. So to my mind, that's conceptually related to the machzorim shel aniyim, tzar aniyim, right? It has this takana la'aniyim. How do you... It improves the aniyim. It's there to help them out. I would say that's a rights-based... remember Raz's formulation about if there an aspect of their well-being depends on it? So it's for the well-being of the... Aniyim, that's what makes it rights-based. And then he says, Vaharehu. Yeah. So my question actually with this is, it's not clear to me what the relationship is between these two claims. The claim that there's takana l'aniyim, and the claim that therefore it's Sariyu kechova love. See, the chova love point says that it becomes a financial debt. The takana l'aniyim is just like the Ritva and the Aruch HaShulchan saying there's something about the tsar of the aniyim which explains kfiya. So how do you explain the relationship between those two? That it's there is kfiya in tzedakah because A, takana l'aniyim, and B, hareyu kechova lav, and therefore kofen aso l'fura chova. How do you understand the relationship between those two things? Rami?
Can you say that the takana l'aniyim creates
a chova? Oh. Yeah, I think the best way to go is to say that the rights-based dimension is so strong, the takan l'aniyim, tzar aniyim, machzorim shel aniyim is so powerful that the halacha just imposes it not even as an obligation, but directly as a financial liability. So I actually think you could go... very far here and say the halacha even bypasses the obligation of the giver and says, you don't like that, Daniel?
No.
Any of that? What? In the reading or conceptually?
In the reading.
What?
In the reading.
In the reading?
It sounds like very much it's on the giver.
Let me say my reading first, then you can tell me why it's wrong. You can try to tell me why it's wrong. So the way I'm thinking of it is like the Torah says, look, this, the Oni needs this, therefore it's his, belongs to him, like a debt belongs to the creditor, and once you have the debt, of course it's going to be, it could be forcibly paid, right? It's not your money anymore. So to go a little deeper in the conceptual description, when I have a debt owed to Daniel, what explains my duty to pay back that debt? The fact that the money is really Daniel's money that's on loan to me. So the obligation to repay actually is just a derivative of the antecedent fact that the money is Daniel's. Correct? It's not that I have an obligation to Daniel and therefore he has some claim to go to Bezdin and enforce collection. Arguably lahefik, right? That money is Daniel's money, and he's entitled to collect it, and therefore I could be forced to pay up. So I think, Romy, this is your reading. Because tzedakah has a takana l'aniyim, therefore the Torah imposes it as a chov, meaning not just a personal mitzvah, but it becomes a financial liability. This money is now earmarked for the ani. It's his money. And mamela, once it's his money, I could be beat up to pay back my debts, just like I have to pay back my mortgage to the bank. Yes? So I think it actually goes further than just the Ritva and the Aruch HaShulchan. the analysis here of the Radvaz arguably says that he agrees with them as the Meta Kansaniyim. But he says that creates a type of financial liability, whereas the Torah stipulates it that's their money. Daniel, tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I just think that based on the reading, it's very much Misad of Yosef, not Misad of Mikavo.
Really? The Yordan Lenachasav, Kasher Osan Lamisha Misarev Lefra Hachov Asher Alav.
Yeah, Hachov
Asher Alav.
It's not him. Very well, it sounds like very much under nothing to have to.
Really? So when they force me to pay back my mortgage, are they.
Again,
they're forcing me to pay back so that I'm Mikayim the mitzvah of not breaking my promise to, you know, pay back debts? Or are they forcing me to pay my mortgage because that money belongs to Chase?
Again, we can look at it conceptually, you can frame it in a way that it sounds like it's the right to the loaner. But based on how he could have phrased it, like the Radvaz could have phrased it differently.
So what are you being medayik in the Radvaz?
It's his debt that he has to.
It's a debt upon him.
It's a debt upon him that he has to pay. Like,
no, 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 no. It's a debt on him.
It's a debt on him.
Not an obligation. It's a debt that just.
You could
claim weighs
that on him. An obligation too. Right?
Yeah, maybe. You could say that.
Right, and then also you could kofi no self throw up a quo. It sounds like it's very much. It's on him to have to pay it back. It's not really.
Well, we beat him up to pay back the debt. If a ganav steals your wallet, right? So why are we forcing him to give it back? So you would say, oh, because he has an obligation. That's your reading of the Radvaz. My reading is like, no, because it's not his wallet, and it's your wallet, and it should be in your possession, and therefore we beat him up to give back what's not his.
But I feel like it would make sense that you were wrong.
How else do you make sense of Romy's diak that the connection between these two statements? There's takana laniyim,
right?
Alav. It's like a debt you owe to the aniyim. You don't want to say that?
It sounds like it's a debt on him to pay the aniyim, but it sounds like it's more misadinosim than.
Anybody agree with Daniel's reading? Josh made a face at you. It's like crazy. Josh, you agree with Daniel's reading?
No. Sorry.
Josh, you agree with your chavrusa?
I don't know. I don't really like either option here.
You just don't want to give stock up.
Well, that's not. I love stock.
Right.
I think it's conceptually hard your way, and I think it's textually hard. And so
why is my way conceptually hard?
Because I don't like saying that it's you know, I find difficulty saying that these two are really connected, even though they're obviously right next to each other.
I mean, there's two separate things.
Takana laniyam, meaning that their money, you know.
It's like the
you just happen to have it.
So you don't think it's conceptually hard, you just think it's.
I just dislike it, I guess.
Right, you don't like the view.
But why is mine fixed?
Right.
You're right.
I don't think mine makes more textual sense. I think.
Because you're saying the language of the Fra Chovo.
Well,
you're saying the Fra Chovo.
If you were to read the sentence, I think it's like the gut feeling is that's more on the nothing than it's on the top. Like that's just
maybe. It's not the way I read it. Let me say this. It's gonna blow you guys. It's gonna blow your mind later. We're gonna see the discussion in the Machane Ephraim. It's not his view, actually, but an issue that he raises, basically more in Ksivis, that some not the Tfisa Machane Ephraim, different one, where he thinks that there's a problem. The Gemara talks about someone who is not chayav in mitzvos, like a shota, somebody who becomes crazy. Based on Radvaz-like arguments, they could have a chiyuv tzedakah without having a chiyuv mitzvos. Because the whole point is that we move straight to a chov on the assets, bypassing any obligation on the person. See, that I think is the major move that the Radvaz is making, right? Takana la'aniyim And therefore, it's kechova love, and yordin l'nechasa, kasheros and l'misha mesarev for achov. So let's say you have somebody who, a shoto, is not chayav in mitzvos, but he borrowed money, right? Or he has somebody else's possessions in his rishos. Of course, he could be kofa to give it back, because it's not his. Nothing to do with the nothing to do with imposing an obligation on him. Everybody see that?
Why did he bypass that? Still has an obligation to give it.
The shoto? He's not chayav in mitzvos. Right, it's not chayav.
You're saying that here, you're just saying, meaning what's the mitzvah element of tzedakah?
You might say the mitzvah element is just to impose the chiyuv. Well, it could be a rights-based mitzvah. So, we'll talk about this Machane Ephraim, but if you could have a mitzvah that the ani is entitled to this under tzedakah, regardless of whether the nosein is obligated, that'd be like really good evidence of a rights-based mitzvah. Right? The mitzvah is that the ani should have this entitlement against the other people.
But you think like going to Ravaz, there's no mitzvah, an individual has no mitzvah to give it to
them. I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that there's no mitzvah. I'm just saying that for the Ravaz, there at least is a dimension where tzedakah is chal directly on your nechasim. Can there be mitzvahs that fall directly on nechasim? Maybe. We have to think about what those are exactly. I'm sure there are some that would come to mind. But the major move, so I think my point is, I think the Ravaz agrees with the Ritva Aruch HaShulchan Shvatrach. That's the Takanas La'anim thing. Then he goes further and says, oh, if that's why it's a quote. Right? So you get to this move directly to the Nechasim being liable. For me?
I don't know how you see from here that Nechasim are liable. I see how there's a quote created from the right of the Ani, but I'm not sure how that shows you that there's a direct,
Yeah, notice Yordan Linachasav.
Okay.
The kfiya that we've seen in the Rishonim so far seems to be kofin the person. You beat him up, you twist his arm.
Yordan Linachasav, right. Irrelevant whether you don't have to be kofin, you just go figure.
Exactly. I think the Radvaz implies, so far all these Rishonim are talking about kfiya sagabra. You're forcing the person. What does that mean? You're forcing him to fulfill the mitzvah. Right? You put pressure on him. Here, you're forcing the performance of tzedakah, bypassing the gavra, just like a debt. If you could pull money out of his bank account, like we do with sanctions against the Russians, and just transfer the money that way, all the better. So I think, now your diak, Romy, is that that's tied to tzedakah being a takana laniyim. So you could totally bypass the gavra. Right? Why do you have to beat him into compliance? Just make his assets comply. That's how I'm reading this. Kara?
I agree with the reading. I think there's just a little bit broader spectrum of views in halacha about what are chovos and how that looks like. Is there like
mitzvah
Or like you sold them off, maybe have a mitzvah, then you just like, oh, pay off debts.
Yeah.
So like it's not so pushed that it's just like a natural.
True.
Like, there are other things you can expect.
I agree. But let me say this. It's not at all obvious for the Ritva and the Aruch HaShulchan that you can make the move from Machsoram Shel Aniyim and Sar Aniyim to Shiva Nechasim. The work that the Chuv dimension is doing for the Radvaz is to generate the Shiva Nechasim. Yes? And then I'm just forecasting that later on we'll see that issue about the Shota, right? The person who's not Chayav Mitzvos, that maybe he's liable to give Tzedakah simply because all you need is a Shiva Dechasim in Staka. Okay? Roman, you're going to say something about the tour? Or?
This just reminds me, like, to me, this is grounded in that in the tour, that I think it's a tour we talked about being with Staka, like, no money belongs to you, no belongs to Hashem.
Yeah.
Therefore, you should never say, like, oh, I don't want to give Staka or something.
Yeah. That's the reason why Josh doesn't like this.
Right, that's what I was
saying. Right? Josh doesn't like this for that reason. Josh Herb. Yeah.
Was it Ravaz or after the tour?
After the tour. Let me just say one thing and we'll end here. We'll talk about this Rav thing next week very quickly. The Rav quotes Reb Chaim as saying, oh, you can machalik between staka as a chovas hayachid and a chovas hatzibur. Right? Where as a chovas hayachid, there's no kfiya power, can't force somebody to give, but as a chovas hatzibur, you could be kofa. We'll talk about that briefly. I don't think it's such a rich avenue of discussion. Ned, you can maybe tell us why you think that this should line up with the Ritva Archa Shulchan Radvaz view, if that's what you're suggesting. But okay, so we're going to stop here. These are the major views of Kfiya and Staka. I'll say one or two things about this next week. Then I want to get deeper into this Radvaz, the Radvaz Archa Shulchan Ritva view, especially the discussion of Shiba Nechasim for Staka. That we viewed Staka as a financial liability, even separate from the personal obligation, personal mitzvah. All right? Good, guys.